Well, hello and welcome to tonight's class called Working with Clients with Limited Capacity. I'm Angela Anoff. I am the founder and owner of the Professional Organisers Edge. I help people get organised, and I help organisers be great organisers and get the word out there about their businesses and so on. So, the topic tonight is quite a serious one. I will be mentioning some case studies. I've got three case studies to share, and I do that. I try and do different case studies at least once a year, so that you get to hear about real life stories and what has worked in real life situations and so on. I have given these three case studies different names, so you will never know who they actually are. And tonight, those names are the code words. Now, every class I mention code words, and the reason we have these code words is so that you can claim a professional development certificate for your future APO accreditation or for whatever else you want to use your professional development for. So I'll tell you at the end what to do with the three code words, but for now, as I mention the name of each of our case studies, write that down and keep that somewhere safe so that you can use it. As I said, this is quite a serious topic. I have worked with lots of clients with various special needs, various challenges, and often for them, it is, you know, the difference between being organised and not can be, you know, really substantial. Before they get organised, they really are in a muddle, and even small steps towards being organised can make such a big difference for them. So, and you'll hear about their stories soon. I will be sharing what their special needs are, what their challenges have been. I'll be sharing about their funding, where their funding is coming from, because sometimes if you've been too ill to work, if you aren't able to work for whatever reason, you know, how on earth do you afford to pay a professional organiser? So I'll be sharing some of that with you about where the money's coming from. And that's important for us to know as well, so that you can, you know, sometimes you'll be asked to find funding sources for people. It's not easy, but sometimes it is possible. And the one thing I will say that is in common across the board, and not just with the three people I'll be talking about tonight, but by anybody who is facing an illness, some kind of a physical or mental condition that makes it more difficult for them than for the average person to get organised, to live life, etc., it can be hard to know where to start. And even what to, you know, you may not know anything about their condition. And the one thing that I always say is ask them. They are the best, you know, they know their condition the best. And so the things that help them, the things that don't work for them, those are the things they will be able to tell you themselves. And especially in this first case that I'm going to share, you'll see how that helps her day to day, the fact that she's able to share with people what works for her. So just because you haven't heard of a particular illness or challenge doesn't mean you can't work with somebody. It just means you might have to do a little research. You might have to ask them, how does that show up for you? Just today, actually, I was answering a question that somebody had about how to help somebody with OCD, that's obsessive compulsive disorder, how to help them. And that's a huge thing because OCD shows up so differently for different people. It can be, it can be the kind that where they have to wash hands constantly because they have a phobia about germs. It could be that they have to constantly check things. You know, did I lock the door? Did I turn off the stove? That kind of thing. And compulsively checking. And in those two cases, it can affect them very differently. And then, with organising and so on, do they have a compulsive need to collect things? Do they have those sort of compulsions? So, again, just because you've heard of a condition doesn't mean we know everything about it. So the best person to ask is the person that you're working with, the person that knows it from the inside. All right, let's get started and let's talk about Kerry. Kerry is our first case. Kerry has a learning disability. She has diabetes. She's a middle-aged woman. She is deaf. She suffers with epilepsy and anxiety and extreme or acute grief. She has had some major tragedy in her life and finds it very hard to function for all of the reasons that I've listed, but also the grief. I was asked to help Kerry for a very short time because there wasn't much funding available. So we figured out that there was just enough funding for me to be able to spend one session one-on-one with her and one session in my office and with me writing up a report. So that's a challenge in itself. But one of the interesting things is that it was the end of the financial year. They had a very little bit of money to use up before the end of the financial year. So, you occasionally get these little jobs that come in where they are desperate to use up funding that's available. So the funding came through Kerry's case manager. It actually, from what I understand, it was her own money, but there was an administrator involved who, of course, needs to make sure the money's being spent wisely. And so the case manager was handling all the invoicing. The administrator was overseeing that the money got spent wisely, and I was the one invoicing, sending in the invoice. Now, what did Kerry need help with? Well, she had a spare room that, it used to be her daughter's room, and her daughter had passed away, which is why she was grieving. It had been over 12 months since her daughter had passed, and she was ready to move on and use that room in a different way. So instead of just being a room where she didn't really like going into it because her daughter's things were in there, as well as a whole lot of stuff, the typical spare room that gets filled up with stuff, Kerry was hoping to be able to turn it into a guest room so that family members could come and stay with her occasionally. But it was a lot of, sorting, the usual organising things where you try and figure out what somebody needs from the process. But as I said, we had just one session together. And with all of Kerry's special needs and the fact that my report was going to be written in a way that created a path forward for her. One of the challenges that we have in Terry's case was there are a lot of people coming and going from her life. She had many different services helping her out, but sometimes working against each other. For instance, you know, as we were working, Terry would say, oh, well, so-and-so said I need more big boxes, more big tubs to put things in. And I actually have a fear of big tubs, because big tubs are great for storing things, but not heavy things. Not if you ever want to lift that tub again. Not if you ever want to, you know, have access to it and so on. So you've got this situation where different people were offering different advice. My job was to sort of collect all of the things that Kerry wanted to achieve, put it down into one report so that many different people could work from that plan and move forward. Another difficulty for Kerry was that there was a lot of turnover with her caseworkers. In that arena, there's a lot of burnout and there's a lot of staff turnover, and Kerry's caseworkers were no exception to that. So not only had she received lots of different messages and a few different plans over the time, you know, there wasn't any consistency with her care. And, of course, there was the limited time. So in a practical sense, as we worked together, of course, I was making lots of observations. We talked about guidelines about what to keep. We talked about removing rubbish, and I helped her set up a very simple way to get things out, because it was obvious that she'd made some decisions previously and things were in bags or boxes or whatever, ready to go to at the op shop, for instance, ready to go out to the bin, but they never made it past the front door. So he was basically stuck waiting for somebody else to take those things and move them on. So, you know, part of my report was about that very practical thing of just helping those things to move on and move out. We talked about a simple routine to fit in with her ADL, which is activities of daily living. So some simple things that she could fit into her already quite busy routine. You know, she had people coming to take her out different days of the week. She had different support groups and so on that she attended. And with her learning disability, it really had to be very basic and not too time consuming. So we talked about the things that would help her with decision making and with as I say, simple things like taking the rubbish out and so on. One of the things I noticed when I was in her home was there was a lot of clutter in her kitchen. It was a small place that she lived in, not many cupboards in the kitchen, but she tended to keep way too much stock of things, you know, several litres of oil and so on when that wouldn't have been necessary. So we talked about safe ways to store things, safe ways to use the kitchen bench top and so on. A few other safety tips I made sure she was aware of and so on. And the old, like I said, with the limiting the size of the boxes, putting a stop to more giant tubs coming into the home. For one thing, there really wasn't any space to put these giant tubs. So that wasn't helping. That they were actually creating more clutter. Some of the things that helped us work well together were because of Kerry's own self-awareness, which is wonderful. When I first arrived, there was a caseworker with her, and I had been warned over the phone that there were some things that she didn't feel comfortable with. For instance, because of her epilepsy, she didn't like people waving their hands quickly. It made her feel as though she might have a seizure. So just calm, slow movements, speaking softly, being aware that if I raised my voice, she would perceive that as being told off like a child, so, and it would upset her, so, you know, not to do that. But really very useful was the fact that she, within a moment of me arriving, sat me down and said, "Here, read this." And she handed me a piece of paper and she said, "Please read this." And then she gave me time to do that, which was wonderful. And it was an A4 sheet of paper with a list of all the do's and don'ts. Things like, you know, talk softly, you know, I don't like to be told off, you know, I have epilepsy, please don't wave your hands around, please don't smoke, which of course I wouldn't anyway, things like that. So that's a really good case of someone being clear with their communication and about their needs. And it was an efficient way to get that conversation out of the way, that she'd already written them all down and so on. So as we work together, I would ask her for clarity a lot because I didn't want to misconstrue anything. It wasn't just me that needed to be clear. I had to make it clear in my report to many other people about what was going to be happening from this point forward. Another thing is ask permission. You know, don't assume that just because someone has a learning disability or, you know, for whatever reason, that they've invited you into their home and now you have free rein. You actually don't. You know, before you open a door, before you open a box, ask for permission to do that. And this was a good way for us to build up some trust pretty quickly. I was there, you know, handling her deceased daughter's things, and it was tough going for her. There were a few times where she had to excuse herself and she'd go and have a cry. And, you know, if I had been really cavalier about opening up her daughter's things and not respecting her grief and her need to, you know, have some timeouts and so on, it would have been not very useful for our relationship and for the whole process. Now, another thing in Kerry's case that worked really well was communicating with other stakeholders. Now, I, like I said, I was writing this report for other people, but even on the day when I was there, she wanted me to speak with the administrator, the person that was handling her money. She was very concerned about being seen to do the right thing. And so even though it took time out, even though it took a good 20 minutes to get through to the person and for me to speak with them, it was worthwhile because it really got her on board. It got Kerry on board. It also got the administrator on board because, you know, as far as they knew, I was a stranger coming in and writing a report. But now we had a conversation that really they could see what my intention was, and it was good. Then finally, the thing that helped Kerry a lot was positive reinforcement. She needed a lot of assurances along the way that she was doing the right thing. Doing the right thing, not disrespecting her daughter's memory, all of those, you know, very sensitive areas for her, but doing the right thing in making good decisions about what to keep and what not to keep. She had some really good ideas about how she was going to use the space and so on. And so the positive reinforcement really helped her give her confidence in making other decisions. And finally, before I left, she had this a communication book that she used for all the different caseworkers that came and went from her place. And she asked me to write in there about what we'd done and so on to communicate with other caseworkers, but also to give her a sticker. She really liked to have a sticker put into her communication book. It made her feel very good and that she'd had a good day. So all in all, as far as I know, Kerry's moving forward, still working with the all the other caseworkers that go in to see her fortnightly and work on this plan. So that was a good story, a good one. We made quite a bit of difference for Kerry in a very short space of time, and it really didn't cost her much at all. So that is a success story. So moving on to the second one, which is Gail. And again, I'm pretty happy with our progress together. Gail and I have been working together for many years now, and her reliance on our sessions is going down. You know, it used to be that I'd go maybe every month to her home, and then it got to be every second month, and now we're down to about twice a year. Gail has suffered for a long time from chronic fatigue syndrome, as well as depression. And of course, it sort of goes hand in hand. She really is quite depressed, especially around the time when her chronic fatigue syndrome flares up. As far as funding goes, this is always purely self-funded. Gail is a professional woman. She has a responsible job. Because of her illness, she can't work full-time, but she is able to support herself, and therefore she's self-funding and happy to call in my help. Now, some of the challenges that we've faced are the limited funds. As I said, she's self-funding, but she can't work full-time, and it's not a lot of money coming in. So we have to work with what she's got. She does have a perfectionist streak, big time. So that's a challenge. And it's not something you can wave a magic wand and give someone a logical reason not to be a perfectionist anymore and voila, they aren't anymore. It's not at all like that. So she battles with that perfectionist streak a lot. And the other difficulty is that she lives in a rented home. So any changes that we would like to make to the home are really limited. You know, you can't build in a new cupboard very easily. You can't do some major differences, major things quickly. And she doesn't feel like she can call on the landlord to make those changes either. But what does Gail need help with? As I said, I've been working with her for a long time, and it's really now at the stage where we're just working, we're sort of in a maintenance phase, I guess. But in the first instance, it was very physical work, going through lots and lots of boxes. She does have a lot of things that she's hung on to, and she's not willing to part with them. It's not a big decluttering job, this one. It's more organising the stuff that she has rather than decluttering. But she needs the hands-on help, the lifting of boxes, the transferring of things to the rubbish, that sort of stuff. And I'm happy to do that. With her chronic fatigue syndrome, basically she sits in a chair and does the decision making while I do the physical running around and sorting and so on. She needs help with follow through. So an example would be, a big pile of unfinished work on her desk. unfinished, as in, oh, I was going to post that to so-and-so. Well, you know, part of my job is to help her address the envelope and get it out of the house and let that next step happen. I look for new possibilities, new ways of doing things, new perspectives. I am like an objective pair of eyes that help her see things in a different way. And as I said, with her perfectionist streak, she isn't always open to doing things in a new way because, you know, she has her definite ideas. But over the years, we have built such a good rapport that, you know, she knows how to take my suggestions. She knows that I am only doing it in her best interest. And the new things that I'm always looking for is that we eliminate any extra steps. You know, we don't need to have the birthday cards ready to be sent, you know, in one room and the ribbon and gift wrap in another room. Let's put them together. You know, these very simple things, sometimes our clients haven't thought of that. And for somebody who doesn't have a lot of energy because of their depression and their chronic fatigue syndrome, even a little thing like that can make a big difference. The things that have helped with this ongoing relationship are the building of trust. Following her imperfect plan. So, you know, it's not the plan that I would create for her. It is her plan that we work together on. And sometimes, it seems like we're going around in circles, but sometimes it's necessary. It is just necessary that we move forward very slowly on her plan rather than me trying to impose my will on her. In this instance, that just wouldn't work. Very short sessions work best for Gail because of her chronic fatigue and not starting too early in the morning helps as well. And being familiar with her limitations helps. I can remember a time right at the start where we were pulling things down from a very high cupboard and, you know, she's taller than I am, so she has better reach. And so she would say, oh, look, don't worry, I'll climb up, you know, with a good sturdy step ladder. And she was up there, but she was up there too long. And she actually did get quite dizzy and have to come down in a hurry. Thankfully, she didn't hurt herself and there wasn't an accident, but it could have been bad. So now we know not to do that. We know that she has her limitations. We need to take it nice and slow and steady. I do all of the running around while she sits and makes decisions, which is tiring enough for her. So that is Gail's story. As I said, it's a success story. She doesn't need me nearly as much. Her chronic fatigue syndrome symptoms are becoming less frequent, which is a good thing, and her depression has lifted somewhat as well. That's good. And now to our third case. This one is Lena. Now, Lena has a lot going on. Lena has addictions. She has addictions to cigarettes, alcohol, and prescribed drugs. She suffers with depression and anxiety. She has chronic pain, which, you know, is why she's addicted to the prescription drugs. When I first started working with her, she was suffering from a lot of grief. Her mother had died. She had cared for her mother for a long time while she was dying. It was a really rough time, and I think it was about 9 months after her mother had passed that she called me. And her voice on the phone, I just knew this woman really needs me. It was the most depressed sounding person I'd ever heard on the phone. And so I just had to work with her. Now, Lena has, as I said, she has these addictions. She has the depression and anxiety, which she acknowledges, and she acknowledges the chronic pain. She does not acknowledge the addiction to alcohol, but there was enough evidence for me to see that it was definitely there. And the grief and so on. Now, she was self-funding, but the funding was quickly running out, and I will talk about why soon, but basically she had inherited quite a bit of money from her mother, and, Lena was a woman in her early 40s, but in many ways she was acting like a teenager. Very poor impulse control, very poor decision making, which was resulting in the money quickly running out, running like sand through her fingers. And this was one of the problems that I was in there to address, to help her. So the practical things that we worked through, one of them was just access to her home. She had moved into quite a large home for one person, but she couldn't even access it because the rooms were just stuffed full of things, you know, old furniture, everything that she could take from her mum's home, she took with her and just crammed into this home, which was just, you know, overflowing. She needed inexpensive solutions, so, you know, there was never going to be any kind of big spender solutions going on. It was all about finding easy ways to stretch a dollar and to make do. To a certain extent, we had to go with the flow. Because of her addictions, in particular alcohol and the prescribed drugs, you never quite knew what you were going to get when I turned up. So one day she could be quite lucid, quite awake, quite ready to work. Another day I could get there and she would be, you know, crawling out of bed at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and really not really ready to make some decisions and to work and so on. And there were a lot of crises happening. So, you know, a small crisis would quickly blow up. A disagreement with someone at work, and she would spiral into a depression and some anxiety, and she would, you know, leave that work before having secured another job, thinking that, you know, oh, I've got all this money from my mum, it's going to be okay. And then, of course, you know, she couldn't find a job. And then she was out of work and eating into her inheritance and, you know, buying an expensive European car when she couldn't afford it and crashing that car and, you know, just one crisis after the next kept happening. So, as I said, I would turn up not quite knowing what we're going to find, and the one thing I could tell was if she was sitting outside waiting for me and having a cigarette, it usually meant we would sit outside for about 15 minutes to talk over the plan first. That was a sign to me that she was feeling anxious and she needed to, you know, get things clear in her head before she could move on. So What helped in this situation was regular appointments. Now, we started out sort of marching to her beat. So she would say things like, I really need to get organised. Give me every bit of time you've got this week. So I would say, all right, let's try Tuesday morning and Thursday afternoon and Friday morning. And then, you know, we'd work Tuesday morning and it's Thursday afternoon maybe, and then she'd fall in a heap. Oh, I can't possibly do any more. She was exhausted and she couldn't do any more. Then perhaps the following week I would turn up, we'd arrange to see each other Tuesday afternoon, and she would have forgotten that I was coming, even though, you know, there was good reminders in place. So what helped in that situation was a regular weekly appointment. I would turn up Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock. She knew it was in the calendar. It was part of her routine after a while. And it actually helped her not just to remember my sessions, but it gave her some structure around her week. Because remember, I said she was unemployed. She had a reason to get out of bed on a Tuesday morning. And sometimes that's all she needed was a reason to get up and get moving and make things happen. She needed consistency, not just with those times, but with my approach to things, because of her tendency to lurch from one crisis to the next and from one plan to the next. So she could quite easily have said, all right, I'm going to get rid of everything, I don't need anything, and then the next week I could have gone back and she'd say, oh, I can't afford to buy new clothes, so I can't throw anything out. So this inconsistent approach of hers was really making life difficult for everybody, because she wasn't, she was going between, I must, you know, shop so that I've got lots of clothes for interviews. And then, of course, what does that mean? You've got no money to food and to eat. So, you know, there was a lot going on for her. I had to watch for warning signs of, you know, really watch for the things that were going to be a problem down the line. So, for instance, she would pick up a new hobby pretty easily and then spend a lot of time with that hobby. And then you'd see signs of her accumulating a lot of supplies with the hobby. Now, in my list of all the challenges that Lena was facing, I didn't list OCD. She might have had that, but, you know, it wasn't diagnosed, so I can't say for sure. She might have had bipolar disorder. A lot of her behaviours seemed to be consistent with that, but I can't diagnose her, and she never told me about a diagnosis, so we don't know about that. But these periods where she was really very excited and about a new hobby or a new interest and would accumulate a lot of things to do with that interest, and then, of course, you know, the big plan, for instance, was to make a lot of craft stuff and sell it at a market, but, you know, it never got to market. It never made it past half-finished items. And another thing that really helped with Lena was firm boundaries. I had to be clear about what I would and wouldn't do, and she was okay with that. She just needed to be told what the boundaries were. I had to be really clear about any kind of system that we put in place. For instance, remember I said she had a very large home and she had a lot of extra things. And so I decided that one room in her home was going to be her overflow room. She was determined that she couldn't possibly throw these extra things out because eventually she would need them. That's okay. But you can't, you know, just put them in that room until you do need them. And that's all that goes in the overflow room, is things, extra items. It was a big enough house that, you know, we could have a whole room dedicated to that stuff and it was okay. So these firm boundaries really started to help her. Now, one of the things that she was spending a lot of money on was storage rental. So not only did she have this big home that she'd filled up, but she had a lot of other stuff in storage as well. So she was paying for the room, the locker to store things. She was paying insurance on the contents of that locker. And one of the first things went on, once I found out about this locker, she didn't tell me straight right at the start. But once I found out and we started working in there, one of the first things we did was get rid of the insurance on it, because the things that were in there weren't worth anything. And, in fact, a lot of her items in there were just worthless, really worthless, like boxes and boxes of boxes and empty, you know, just newspaper. It appeared like it was boxes to store, but it had nothing in them. So it was a big breakthrough for her when she could see she didn't need the insurance anymore, and then the second breakthrough when she didn't actually need the storage unit anymore. Started immediately saving her money every month. And those were the things that made a difference for her, you know, slowly, slowly trying to clear out a room, clear out some useless things so that she could actually live and work. And so in the end, although we never got to, you know, a fabulous happy place for Lena, and I don't think she ever will, there was a lot that I was able to help her with, and in the end she had to stop hiring me because she ran out of money. But the good news is she's now working. She's working interstate. She got a job, and I do hear from her occasionally. So that is good news. So we have come to the end of our three case studies, and now I will open it up for any Q&A. Has anybody got a question, a curiosity or a suggestion about any of our cases? No, it's quiet. That's okay. Now, if you do have a question, if you think of something when you're listening to the recording of this and so on, please do reach out. I invite you to put it into our Facebook group or send me an email. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about it. And what I will leave you with is that all of our clients have challenges. Some of our clients have bigger challenges, and those are the ones where being organised can make an enormous difference for them. They really can't do it on their own, and it is a joy to be able to help people and see what a big difference you can make in their lives. So what to do with our three case study code words? Send them to me at angela@creatingorder.com.au. Put clients with limited capacity in the subject line so I know which class you're referring to, and I will get you a certificate so that you can use it towards your APO accreditation and any other professional development. And I wish you all the best with working with clients with limited capacity. Thanks.